It's not your fault.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's not your fault.
Don't do this to me, man. Not you. Not you, Sean.
Well, it's not your fault.
This is You Had Me at Rewind, and we're traveling back to December 5th, 1997, to talk about Good Will Hunting.
You can do anything you want. You are bound by nothing.
And you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. I'd do anything to have what you got.
And some never know how much they can have.
I love you.
Until they discover how much they can give. Academy Award winner Robin Williams, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Stellan Skarsgård, and Minnie Driver. Good Will Hunting, nominated for 9 Academy Awards.
Welcome to You Had Me at Rewind. I'm your host, Nathan Chandler, and this is the podcast where we revisit the 90s flicks that raised us. I am thrilled to welcome in a returning guest to the podcast, but definitely the first time for this series, Bo Gatlin. How are you doing, Bo?
I'm great.
You're doing great. This is real exciting because we're actually doing this in person, but also I'm in the great state of Texas. I can say that because I'm a native Texas Texan, was born here. Not in Houston, but in Longview, Texas. So I've been to Houston a few times, but it's been a while. So I thank you for welcoming me into your home. When I reached out to you about this, and I really wanted you to do this podcast, and you were willing to do so, but you said, you have to come to me. I was like, well, I guess it's worth it.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. So we get our families together, have a good time, and we get to do some podcasting.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we're a little cruel to them. We did a very much of a dad thing. We took them all to NASA, which was real exciting.
Yeah.
Then you just threw on Apollo 13, which is playing in the other room, and we have ditched them to do this podcast.
Yes. Well, you know, as a quick aside for the listeners out there, we took a bunch of teenage and preteen girls to NASA with seemingly no context for what NASA is.
It's true.
And so we're doing it a little bit backwards. But I think they're learning some things.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's summer is a good time to keep their their brains fresh. So, yeah, Bo's been on before. We talked about two very random movies, Footloose, which was a real fun watch for sure. And then also the movie Prey, about it's like the Predator prequel. So two different very movies. This one, I guess it's just an eclectic mix here. So
yeah.
I had reached out to you. You chose Good Will Hunting. And so my question to you is like, why did you choose this movie?
Yeah, so I saw Good Will Hunting. It's one of the first movies I can remember really connecting with on an emotional level, or one that moved me emotionally. And it came out, when was it? It was 97?
97.
Okay, so I would have been, I guess, 16 years old. I remember just, it was kind of a coming of age time for me, of course. I knew what kind of music I liked. I liked a specific type of movie, but I saw this one on a Sunday afternoon in downtown Cushing, Oklahoma, at the Duncan Theater, which is an old it should be a historic theater. I don't think it is. It's just run down. But
For some context, how big is Cushing?
Okay, so Cushing is a town of about 10,000.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And once upon a time, it was an oil boom town, and so you know, there was some money there at some time in the past, and so this theater is just actually really cool. And by the time I started going there as a child, having grown up in that area, it was actually like $1.50 to see new movies there.
That's crazy.
And I've seen so many movies there. And yeah, Sunday afternoon's a great time to go see a movie, especially this one. And I think I might have even seen this with some high school friends.
Okay.
So it's a great story, and it combines like film with music, and I love both of those things. And this movie has great music in it, alongside just I don't know, there's like a string of movies that I liked growing up where there's maybe a precocious kid who has hardships and is aspiring to great things, right? And so this movie, like the fact that he's going on to do big things in life, I was at that age where I was like wondering what my future is going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I just connected with it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, if anybody hasn't seen this movie, I mean, I think it's definitely worth watching. Like, it's just kind of, especially with the 90s, it's just kind of in the lexicon movies, especially so many. I mean, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, this is really where they got their launch, not completely their start, but just if you haven't seen the movie, just a little overview. This movie, it follows a brilliant but troubled young janitor at MIT, Will Hunting, played by Matt Damon, whose hidden genius is discovered by a professor and channeled through therapy with the wise and patient psychologist, Sean McGuire, played by Robin Williams. It's directed by Gus Van Sant. Sorry. Is directed by Gus Van Sant and written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, who won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. The film became a cultural moment, and Robin Williams also took home the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. So what else was going on in December 1997? The top song on the Billboard Hot 100 was Candle in the Wind by Elton John.
Wow.
Yeah. Titanic was released just 2 weeks later. Which dominated the theaters after that.
Yeah.
South Park was in its first season on Comedy Central.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Wow. That it's still going. Seinfeld and Friends were battling for sitcom dominance. Hanson, The Spice Girls, and Chumbawamba were all topping the charts.
Yeah.
And AOL Instant Messenger was the way to flirt from your home desktop. So you had AOL, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
I was about to ask what your screen name was.
I was aware of AOL, but I remember watching Titanic with my mom when it first came out, and I'm from a really small town, so I only would ever see the internet at school, and I'm kind of amazed we even had it there, like at the library. But I remember the whole time I was watching Titanic, I had just seen a Best Buy ad around, like, because it was like around New Year's, I guess, or whatever. Or Christmas, and you know, Best Buy used to send out, like, in the Sunday paper, like, their ads, and I was really wanting to get a computer for the house. And the whole time I was watching that movie, I was just thinking, I really want a computer.
one of my best friends, Todd, from Longview, Todd Ferguson, his dad was always like, he just was kind of techie like that, and like kind of on the forefront. And he was like one of the first guys I remember having a computer at his house, and like instant messenger and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
He never, Todd himself never dived into it. But his dad did. So it was always, yeah.
Well, what was your AOL screen name?
Well, it's real embarrassing.
Then you must say it.
So, I had a roommate at Baylor my freshman year. I went potluck. His name was Philip, and he was like, and he would say this, like a computer nerd.
Okay.
And he set up AOL for me, because at that time in the dorms, like, internet speed was so fast. At the time. Now it'd be funny to actually know how fast it was, but I still feel like it was decently fast. But anyway, so really, like, I mean, a lot of freshmen all had them or whatever. So I was like, yeah, I would like an account. So he set me up with an account, and he made this screen name without any kind of approval for me. And so it was Nate Dog, two G's in Dog, is I-Z crazy with a K, K-R-A-Z-Y. So I still have friends today, like from college, who are like, hey, Nate Dog is crazy. I was like, oh my gosh.
That's so of the time.
Yeah, wow, so of the time. So, okay, so back to this movie. I just, before I jump into some questions about, for you, this is actually, I'm kind of glad you chose this. I really don't know if I saw this movie, like, when it came out. Mm-hmm. I saw it, I know, pretty shortly thereafter, but it had been a long time since I'd seen this movie. So, like, watching it this time, I wasn't like completely surprised. I knew where it was going. There was kind of some things in there. Honestly, I kind of forgot about the Minnie Driver romance kind of subplot in it, which actually drives a lot of the story, you know? And so it was interesting kind of watching this again for sure. So that's kind of where I came into this. But you talked about, like, when you first saw it. You kind of even mentioned how it spoke to you then, but, like, did it kind of speak to you any differently, or did it kind of hit on those kind of same memories that you had?
No, it was totally different because I'm 43 now, and I'm on, you know, the side of working for now almost 20 years or longer. And when I first saw it, when it impacted me, I was a sophomore in high school, with my entire future ahead of me.
Right.
And so watching, I guess in the movie, he's 21 or he's in his 20s. He's obviously not a teenager.
Right.
But he was someone that was ahead of me and older than me. And so obviously in the movie, he's very much trying to figure things out or not even realizing that he needs to. But so I saw it from that lens at that age. But watching it this time, it was so different because I just see a very naive, overconfident mm-hmm. young man.
Yeah.
Who doesn't know anything versus, you know, this guy's doesn't have it all figured out, but he does kind of
mm-hmm.
was my perspective back then. You know, he's got all the brain power in the world and he's going after what he wants. So that part was very different to me and interesting.
Yeah.
Just all the ways that he thinks he knows exactly what's happening, which is how a lot of 20-year-old men are, young men, right? We are so overconfident and think we know everything, but don't. But it was just really clear on this watch through.
Yeah, yeah. I did love the scene where Sean, I was just going to say Matt Damon, but when they're on the park bench kind of outside near the pond,
yeah.
And they kind of talked about that experience thing, but Sean challenges him of like, have you ever been out of Boston? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she could tell me everything about these artists and all of that, but you don't know the smell of the Sistine Chapel because you've never been there.
Yeah.
And so that kind of like experience in life versus just, you know, the book, smart, you know, knowledge of it or whatever like that.
Yeah. Also, everyone just looks really young in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's been a while since you've seen it, you may have even forgotten everybody that's in it, you mm-hmm. know. So obviously Damon and Affleck and I forgot about Skarsgård being in this movie. Oh, yeah. And but also their crew, like Damon's friends and stuff. So Casey Affleck's in it
yeah.
as well, and then Cole Hauser, who is has just become super famous for Yellowstone. This just hit you?
Oh my God. I knew
he's ripped.
When I rewatched yeah. it, I was like, how do I know that guy? Yeah. Of course it's Cole Hauser. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Wow.
And still somehow, like, I kind of laughed this movie. I like watching it. I'm like, he kind of just, I don't know. I know Cole Hauser has lines in this movie, but it felt very mumbly throughout.
I agree with you. Like I have to admit, like I only remember his like the part at the end of the movie when he's giving them the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And outside of that, he is pretty much non-existent. I mean, he's in scenes. While we're talking about this, though, the part that I think I got tickled the most by on this rewatch was the real like unsung hero of this movie to me is Casey Affleck. I mean,
yeah,
he is at peak comedy in this movie, yeah. And the interplay between him and his crew is absolutely fantastic. He's honestly one of my favorite actors. He has some of the better SNL skits that have ever been done by a guest, I think. One involving Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen that and you're listening to this, you need to go do Casey Affleck Dunkin' Donuts. It's incredible. But he's been in some really weird movies. Drowning Mona
okay.
is one of those. I think he's in that. And he's just he's a really funny guy, and I think he really shines in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, so. Definitely. Have you ever been to Boston?
No.
No, I haven't either. Mm-hmm. And I know, I'm sure there's an official list of the top, you know, 10 Boston movies. Yeah. But, I mean, just from a lot of, I'm a fan of the Bill Simmons podcast, and he's a big Boston guy. But, I mean, I think this is one they definitely claim, like the city claims. But it's also, I think it's an amazing portrait of this, like, working class group mm-hmm. versus you have the prestigious universities. You have the Harvard there.
Yeah.
You know, so this kind of mix of, like, you know, blue collar, you know, and white above white collar. I mean, just sure. this like
yeah.
Ivy League yeah. academic success, whatever, which is all played out in that scene with Damon and then the ponytail guy.
Yes.
So also like kind of going into that, which is a great scene, you know, the famous line that came out of this, you know, how about them apples or whatever like yeah. that. Was that a thing before this movie, or is this like, can this movie like,
that's a great question. I mean, I certainly probably stole it and used it after seeing this, but if it was a thing before this, I'm not aware of that. And I mean, what, that whole sequence starting in the bar where he's, he's clearly like regurgitating from his amazing memory and his just how well read he is for no good reason. Throwing it back in this Harvard guy's face, Harvard guy's face. It's just one of the greatest scenes ever of like underdog coming back in a movie.
Oh, they're saying this is AI, but it's a phrase that apparently traces back to World War One. So, anyway, but regardless, I mean, I think new for a lot of people. I think it's kind of funny though, because like he wins the initial like battle in the bar, like yeah. he totally like embarrasses yeah. this guy yeah. and gets Minnie Driver's character like interested in him.
Yeah.
He gets the number, then actually goes and seeks out this guy again. Then tells him, if I was that dude, I'd be like, yes, you won. Why leave me alone? But
it's true. Well, it's in line with, isn't it like, there's a part in the movie where there's some kid that beat him up in like kindergarten.
Yeah.
They're now in their 20s. He seeks him out, or they drive past him. And they just like, okay, we're going.
Yeah.
And they go just beat him up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You know, honestly, like when this movie started, like I said, I don't have the connection to it. And when it started going, in particular, that park scene, the big fight thing, because the way it's shot and stuff, I was kind of like, the movie felt real rough to me. Like it didn't feel like a super professional movie.
Okay.
And it's really like when the therapy sessions start between Damon and Robin Williams, where it sucked me in, where I was kind of like, oh, okay, we're in it now. But the kind of beginning stuff kind of it took a little. I don't know if it's honestly I've always liked Matt Damon a lot. I think he's always been a great actor. I think he's amazing in this movie. Maybe because he's, you know, we know him now, and he's been in so many different things. I don't know if it's that like kind of that mentality of thinking that Damon is this guy. Mm. He's still like so handsome, you know, like being so blue collar. I don't know. Maybe it was a little harder to get there too. You just like, especially the role since this movie, he doesn't really play that like super hard nose, rough type of character.
That's a good point. I didn't know this before when I first saw this movie, but just in going back and revisiting it, that I did know that he and Ben had written this.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they sold it 5 years prior to it getting made.
Yeah.
And which makes me think, do you know how old they were when this movie came out, or when they were acted in it? Or how old they were when they wrote it? I mean, it's.
Yeah. I don't know. I know like Damon, he was in Courage Under Fire. Before this,
okay.
And then Affleck, certainly he was in Dazed and Confused, and I can't remember if he did like Chasing Amy like before that movie kind of came out, or like around this time, so they kind of were like in it, but I think they were definitely older than you would think, but still like young.
They look so young. And well, it's crazy because I was reading a story about how they got paid $600,000 for the screenplay. And they said that, so they split it, $300,000 each. They said $100,000 of that went to their agent. Is that right? That seems like a lot. Maybe it was $100,000 to taxes, which sounds like a lot. $30,000 to their agent. Long story short, all said and done, they were left with like $60,000. And they each bought Jeep Grand Cherokees. And so in the end, he's like, we were left with like $30,000.
Okay, so this is once again AI, so take it for what that's worth. Mm. But they were 22 years old, and Damon was 22, Affleck was 20 when they first started writing it.
Wow.
So maybe they were in those upper 20s when it finally started happening.
Well, the reason I asked that is because I have not read or critiqued screenplays, I mean movies, but that's kind of a world that you know a lot about. Like, does that maybe have something to do with the roughness of the movie, or is that more of like a director's take?
Oh, no, kind of history. I think because this script existed for so long, like they were trying to make it more, just studios that got their hands on it were trying to almost make it more like almost like a crime espionage type of film.
Oh.
I think that's maybe where some of the scenes where he's like, is it the CIA or like those type of thing? You know, he has that long scene where he like basically scolds them for like what his job. So I don't know where that's kind of where that came from, but so, you know, so people were trying to make it more into like, I don't think they really were sold that people would like go see this movie about you know, a therapy session pretty much. Yeah, and so they were trying, and I think ultimately with Miramax who came in and Harvey Weinstein and their group, but that was one thing about this movie that they wanted to kind of go back to the roots of it. Of, you know, kind of being more just, I think, dialogue driven. But I think it's a little interesting. I can see one screenplay. I don't know off the top of my head what its competition was. But there were things in this movie that I thought were off about it, too. It's like, oh, that's an, you know, when he sends Ben Affleck to be his stand-in for the job interview? Like, it's a funny scene, but kind of like where it is, it was like then where I was like, this is a different movie. Like, I don't, you know, like that very much felt like a studio note, like, oh, we need a laugh here or something. Maybe because the other scenes are like so serious. I don't know. Yeah. But but just from the scenes, and I think in particular what Gus Van Sant brings to this is just those moments of just sitting in silence, like those scenes really like have some, even though we're never in a full like hour therapy session, we feel the growth that that develops between those two.
Yeah. What other movies has Gus Van Sant done?
Well, he's always been known kind of, you're really asking me some like,
if you know off the top of your head, because I mean, was this like a breakthrough movie for him, or was he known before this?
It was in the sense of like, he was always known kind of like a more of an arty independent type of filmmaker.
Yeah.
And this was definitely probably like his most successful film, but it was definitely kind of like, they pulled him out, you know, experienced filmmaker, but not like this caliber, like probably working with, I mean, certainly he had younger actors here, but I mean, at this point, Robin Williams and Skarsgård are like, you know, they've been around the block. So let's see real quick. So before this, I never saw this. In 1989, he directed Drugstore Cowboy and My Own Private Idaho. Have you heard of those?
Yeah,
but those are two films I haven't seen, but I know that were like, I mean, I don't think Sundance existed back then, but like they were like kind of big indie darlings and stuff like that. So I think it was something like a director that they trusted with this material.
Yeah, pretty cool. Well, I
he's probably he directed Milk in 2008.
Okay,
about Harvey Milk with Sean Penn. But I'm looking through his IMDb.
Yeah, what's his bigger? What are his bigger movies following this one, though?
Oh, following this one, really? Oh, well, this has probably got him into director's jail, as they call it. But he did the remake of Psycho, the shot-for-shot remake with Vince Vaughn and Anne Hesch.
Yeah,
which Psycho is one of my favorite films. I've actually never seen that remake or whatever like that. But Finding Forrester.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is kind of like, I know I saw it probably when it came out, so I don't remember it, but it's very similar of like,
yes, it is
protege who like, yeah. But then I did see this, Elephant. And it's kind of like a recreation of the Columbine shooting.
Oh,
but it doesn't use that exactly, but it follows like the, it's been a while since I've seen it. It might be one take, but it's type, but it's very like, real time type of like, this is what the scenario would be like. Obviously real tough, like film to watch, but like kind of fascinating. And then he did one called Last Days, which is like, it's not, I'm looking right now. I don't know if the character is actually Kurt Cobain. No, but it's essentially about Kurt Cobain's last days. I'm showing Bo the movie poster now. Like, he's obviously Kurt Cobain, you know. So he kind of went back into his like wheelhouse, I think, after after that. So
yeah. Well, I'm glad he made this one. It's a good one. What was really interesting to me was I loved the movie and this the music in this movie. I had no idea who did it at the time when I first saw it. It's moody. It's acoustic guitar. Yeah. It's you know, it's just.
Well, famously, Elliott Smith.
Yeah. So it was my introduction to Elliott Smith, and he's got a good number of songs. I think one even written for this movie. Some were already songs of his. They weren't for this movie. But the thing that's interesting is it's like half the songs are his, and then the other half of the movie is scored by Danny Elfman,
right?
Who does most of like Tim Burton's like movies.
Right.
And the music is lovely.
Yeah.
Where it isn't. And so I had never noticed. Now, this isn't like a hard rule that they follow, but Elliott Smith songs never enter the picture unless until Minnie Driver comes onto the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually when she's there, it's Elliott Smith,
mm-hmm.
not Danny Elfman. Yeah. And that changes more toward the end of the film, but I had never noticed that. I don't know how much of it was intentional, how much of it was just to create either a sense of wonder or a sense of like emotion when, like, Danny Elfman being the wonder, like he's, you know, fantastical music. And it's anyway, it was an interesting choice to use those two almost entirely. This was a good, I mean, you know, back in the day you would go buy a CD of a soundtrack to a movie, and this was a good one.
Yeah.
It's one that I had, because of Elliott Smith and that, like, Elliott Smith led me to like Wes Anderson has used Elliott Smith in some of his movies, and he's real big on music. And so it kind of made me want to go seek those things out. And, for that reason alone, anyone should watch it.
Yeah. If people don't know Bo, he's a great musician. I mean, right now I'm looking, he has, four just cool looking guitars behind him. And so I would definitely pin you as an Elliott Smith guy.
Yeah. So, and it fits perfectly with this movie. So,
do you like Minnie Driver in this movie?
I actually really do like Minnie Driver in this movie.
Maybe, I do too.
Maybe more than any other movie I've ever seen her in.
Yeah, I've always been like kind of indifferent on her a little bit. Like, I've never like disliked her, but you know, one of those like, I know I've seen her a lot. If you asked me to name her, all her movies, like I would struggle. And there's something about their chemistry here. It kind of works, I think.
Yeah, very, very much so. I think she's really good in this movie. She comes across as a very real person.
Yeah.
And, I think just like in some of the more emotional scenes between her and Matt Damon, I mean, like I was, in full transparency, I was mowing my lawn while I was listening to the second half of this movie.
Oh,
but it was moving me, like the scene toward the end of the movie where she's like saying like, let's just be real with each other here. Like, you know, you don't have 12 brothers and all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's worried that she's going to leave him and do a take back, as she says. And she has no concept or frame of reference to what he even means by that, because she doesn't understand the depth of his pain growing up, because he's been too scared to share with her. And that scene was like, I was mowing the lawn, like I was tearing up a little bit. So, I mean, I think it's the strength of their acting and the dialogue that you don't even have to be watching it to be moved by it.
You're like, it's just the allergies. The grass is getting to me. Well, you know, I kind of wondered, I really don't have any evidence to back this up, but I was kind of thinking a little bit, especially nowadays in a good way, I think people are very much more open with their feelings, or even like trauma. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's the, you know, a mental health day, just that, you know, that terminology, certainly something that did not exist, in the 90s. And I kind of wondered, you know, Sopranos, was a little bit after that. I think it was like 2001 maybe, mm-hmm. but like, you know, with his like therapy session, I kind of wondered a little bit. Now there's certainly been movies of this elk, where, you know, mentor, mentee type of thing. But I don't know if too many things existed of this raw, you know, just this dialogue about trauma and these things, not just from Will's background, but also from Sean's background in this movie as well, you know. So, but I kind of wonder about that, if why this was a movie that kind of connected with audiences a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was something they hadn't really seen on screen before.
Maybe so. And you know, he goes through what, maybe three therapists before he gets to
Sean,
and shows his how he just thinks it's ridiculous and how he's easily able to manipulate those people as though, yeah, this is a joke. I'm proving it to be that the case. But I did have a question this time around on this movie, which was about Sean. He was clearly some sort of genius. He was going to MIT. Well, I don't know that. He was really good friends and roommates with Dr. Lambeau, who is some sort of math genius and math professor, right?
Yeah.
So how did Sean go from presumably math genius to teaching counseling or therapy at a junior college?
Right.
Like, I wanted to know what that path was.
Yeah. It's almost like, I think it kind of hints that he might have just chosen a simpler lifestyle because of his wife that he met.
Yeah.
You know, because that's almost like this movie's all about like full potential. And clearly the Skarsgård character has gone in an individual path. Now, we don't get to know his like background and stuff, but we never get the sense that he is going home to kids. I mean, well, he's not. He's hitting on his students.
He's hitting on kids.
Yeah. He's really not a good person. I think it's kind of hinted at that, like, cause I think Will like even challenges Sean almost kind of like, dude, like, who are you to tell me that I can do all these great things? Look at you. Yeah. Like, what have you done? You're like in this room, like talking to me or whatever. Yeah. And I think Sean is like, no, I didn't need that to elevate who I am. It was my relationship with my now deceased wife. Now, I do like how through this interaction, it's like pushed. Even Sean knows that he's gotten in a state of probably, I don't want to say he's like given up on life, but he's realized that he's not really challenged himself probably at this point in his life. Will does challenge him to go out and do some more exploration. Like he's not giving up counseling, but he decides to take that sabbatical, you know, that sort of thing. So, I'm just talking now. I forgot what question he asked me, but
you did kind of answer. We don't really know how he got from presumably being. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, you know, basically I don't really like this term settling down, but you know, he decided to go a more kind of domesticated lifestyle. And so this is just, but I had her, you know, versus, you know, trying to win these awards and stuff. That's kind of what I assume, but yeah.
Yeah. It's just it's a total pivot though, away from math.
Yes, it is. It's quite a pivot.
I guess lots of people do that though, really in the real world, don't they?
Do things not at all
in the degree that they earn.
He makes reference to, you know, he's basically was counseling, you know, war vets and stuff like that. And
That's right.
It became, you know, I think more of a heart thing for him, you know, than a numbers thing, I guess. So
yeah.
Have you ever had like a big fight, like how Sean and Skarsgård, I can't ever remember his Professor Lambeau or something. that type of history fight. Have you ever had a fight like with a friend like that before?
That's a good question. Maybe in college I did.
You think so?
Yeah. Not since. Yeah. I don't think. But there was clearly there was a lot of baggage there. There were many years of feelings pent up there.
Yeah.
So no. How about you?
No, I'm not really that type. But I do. I had two friends in college, and once I honestly thought they were joking. One time we were like, it was like almost like midnight. I remember we were driving to a Taco Bell or something, and they started yell fighting like that. And I thought they were just kidding because I had never seen that before. Mm-hmm. And they were like dead on serious. And like later somebody told me, it's like, yeah, that's just kind of the relationship they have. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But I certainly have heard of like in some of the workplaces that were not quite to that level, but there's definitely like two polar opposites who have like, have a deep history because they've had to work with each other so long, but they don't really like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this, there's a few things with this movie that are kind of coming to mind as we talk more. One is there's definitely some lines from this movie that I've carried with me since I've seen it. One is, you know, how do you like them apples?
Yeah.
Though I don't think I've actually said that, like, except in jest. But the other one is, I use this all the time. whether I'm like joking with people or in work settings or whatever else, when something is very rare that's happening, which is the part at which Matt Damon is like talking to Robin Williams and he's like, oh, hey, I read your book. And Robin Williams says one of my favorite lines. He says, oh, you're the one.
Yeah.
And so I've continued to bring this. I bet that it happens at least once a year, yeah, if not more, that, yeah, I'll reference this and I'll tell them it's from, you know, this scene.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, yeah, okay.
I actually said that the other night.
You did?
In reference to this podcast. We went to a 4th of July firework thing and we ran into a family. And it was actually an older lady. And she asked me, she's like, are you still doing the podcast? I was, yeah, like, oh, that's funny that you said that. I'm actually kind of ramping things back up again.
Yeah.
And, but then in the moment I was like, she's just older. And I said, do you listen to the podcast? Are you the one? Whatever. I was impressed. And she made reference to one person, our mutual friend. So that's why she listened. But, yeah, still I was like, oh, well, cool. She listened. But yeah, I was like, yeah, you and me. And yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know if that line was ad-libbed by him. I'm sure that maybe there's a good chance it was. I did recently hear that at the end of the movie. I mean, it's just the greatest, right? When Will has left Robin Williams, or Sean, the therapist, the letter that says, I've gone to see about a girl. And Robin Williams says, whatever, he stole my line. That was totally ad-libbed by Robin Williams, apparently. Yeah. Oh. I was like, oh, man, that's just so, it's such a great line.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I love Robin Williams in this movie. He was always, when he passed away, which I don't want to say ironically, but it's interesting. This movie that's dealing so much about grief and trauma, Robin Williams was definitely a guy that was going through it and through depression and that sort of thing. But he's, I always loved him as an actor. I mean, certainly in the same 90s he had, you know, he was all over the place, but yeah. I mean, I always liked his range. Like, mm-hmm, I mean, as funny as he always, you know, and even in this movie, I think like, there's a restraint here from him that you still, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, even, I mean, he did some pretty dark films, but even in the more serious movies, they would like kind of give him these moments to do his zany voices and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. And, he really doesn't do it in this movie, but I mean, I don't know the competition he had, but like when you read that he won an Oscar for this role, it's like, oh yeah. I mean, I think he's incredible in this movie. But
yeah.
Were you a Robin Williams fan?
Big time.
Yeah.
Love Robin Williams. Super sad when he passed and
yeah,
hearing about the circumstances of that. Yeah, he's as much of a part of my childhood, especially with movies, as anyone else I could think of. I mean, from Mrs. Doubtfire to...
Yeah.
He's in so many... Even Aladdin and just...
Yeah, yeah.
So many things.
What about Batty from Ferngully?
Did not know that. Wow. I mean, one of the other movies...
Was it Batty? Was that the character?
I've seen that movie a couple times. I think that's why when it came out, I couldn't tell you. I didn't know he was in that.
Not to go on a Ferngully tangent.
Let's go there.
Which, do you think that's ever been said on a podcast before? probably. But the oil monster kind of scared me as a kid.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. I don't remember.
Well, I like the fact that, like... you know, basically pollution is the villain of the story.
Yeah.
But like, it starts off like a smoke, but like they get in like some kind of engine, I think. And like this, like oil kind of monster like comes out and it was kind of frightening, but.
who played the oil monster? Skarsgård? Just kidding.
yeah, I was right, man. Batty Coda was the character's name. Not Skarsgård, but the voice actor for the villain was Tim Curry. So,
wow.
Kind of, you know. Wow,
big names in that movie.
Oh, Christian Slater.
What?
Oh, I'm not Cheech Marin. And Tony Loke. Do you know who that is? He's saying, oh, the Wild Thing.
Tone Loke.
Tone, yes. Loke, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. And also from Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
I think it's time, Hollywood, if you're listening, that we get a live-action remake of Ferngully.
No. Anyway, I'm sorry. We talked about Robin Williams. So, yeah.
No, one of the other movies that I had said is represents the 90s for me is a movie starring Robin Williams called Toys.
Right. So you threw that at me, and I know I saw it, but I don't remember anything about it.
It is weird. It feels like a Tim Burton movie. It also has LL Cool J in it and Joan Cusack. Okay. And a young but not so young, she plays the Princess Bride, Robin Wright Penn.
Yeah.
Is in that movie. It's great. But he's amazing in that movie. He's just all over the 90s, Robin Williams. And so it was really cool to see him in this. I think I heard that when he came on board was really the nod that maybe Weinstein needed to say, like, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
I could be off on that. Yeah. Maybe it was that this was going to be at Sundance.
Mm.
And he was like, oh, Sundance movies go on to make like lots of money or something like that. But I'm glad it got made.
Yeah.
Had Robin Williams, to your knowledge, won an Oscar prior to this movie?
See, I feel like he did for Good Morning Vietnam, I might be wrong. But that feels right.
Mm-hmm.
But I might be wrong. Certainly, I was looking through his IMDb here. I mean, I would assume he was nominated in Dead Poets Society.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but have you seen Good Morning Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah. Really, it's been a while since I've seen it, but pretty good. So, like I had mentioned, so I really struggled when I wrote the review for this film because, like I said, there's moments I was sucked in. Others I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But are you real offended if I said that, like, I didn't think this was a great film?
Mm. You know, that's a good question. I think if, again, the premise of this was, like, what's a movie that defines the 90s to you or to me?
Right, right.
And for me, it does. So it's hard for me to separate what it stirred in me and the time that it sits in my life as a marker from the movie itself. Having rewatched it, it's probably been more than a good 6 years or more since I've seen this. It's one that I had on DVD when I first started buying DVDs. I watched it all the time because I loved it. But no, I'm not offended by that. I mean, I guess my point is, if I were watching this for the first time now, I can see how it would maybe at times feel disjointed, slow, even.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like there's a few movies happening in one.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the whole part about him being a genius is really only to serve, like, you. What did you call it a few minutes ago? You said it's really a movie about sitting in therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Well, it really does feel that way, though. I mean, ultimately.
Yeah.
But, because I had recently read that either they had written a longer screenplay that did include somewhat of a spy thing, or that studios were trying to get them to go there, and they're like, just cut it off here. This mm-hmm. is the movie,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting, but no, that doesn't offend me. It is a good movie.
Yeah.
But you said a great movie. You don't think it's a great movie.
Yeah. I couldn't get there. And mm-hmm. I read a lot of other people's reviews, and mm-hmm. it's one of those like, yeah, I get it. But it was something about the beginning of it that I had a mm-hmm. little kind of, I don't know.
It's got a lot of machismo in the beginning of it. And I think the movie would really, it must really resonate with young men.
Yeah.
Speaking
of the 90s, especially during that time, I mean, it was a time of a lot of white male angst and kind of like, you know, you think of, even though like Woodstock 99 was later, you know, at this time, a lot of music that was coming out, you have your Limp Bizkits and those type of like, you know, it's kind of like, why isn't our voice heard? Which is like completely ridiculous at this time. But it was almost kind of like that. There's something deeper to like troubled mm-hmm. guys. You know, there's mm-hmm. something there, you know.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
This may be too personal a question to ask.
Uh-huh.
But, and so you don't have to get, have you ever gone to a therapist? Have you ever?
It's not too personal. I have not, but it's not something I'd be like, no way. You know what I mean? Like, I totally see the value in that. And, I think it's difficult if if you don't have good friends to confide in people, and even a therapist who's a totally neutral party.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of benefit to that.
Oh yeah. I do too.
So, I feel that way even, especially more now than ever at my age, because it's just like, there's a lot that happens in life.
Yeah.
And, to just kind of get stuff off your chest with a neutral ear, I think is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. I kind of, I haven't ever, personally either or whatever, but I do think, not that I'm dealing with like anything like mm-hmm. real dark or not, I guess a therapist would be like, hold on there. No, but, but no, I totally get it. I think the smaller that, my circle grows, like, you just kind of like, yeah, I'm just riding with these people, you know, mm-hmm. I do think, but in doing that, I think sometimes it like, yeah, you kind of don't talk about things like as much or whatever. So that neutral party, like you've suggested, it's more so that versus, you know,
yeah.
I just, especially watching this and knowing I kind of almost kind of wonder if the story of Damon and Affleck, the real people uh-huh. writing this movie, their success story, if that's what carries this movie a little bit more than the movie itself.
That's a good point. Maybe so.
Cause it was a pretty like, and the screenplay has always kind of been an Oscar that like they give out to the, like, kind of the more indie film. I'm sure there's examples where that's not the case, mm-hmm. but like, and even this one, I mean, I would assume it's original screenplay. I would believe there's an adapted screenplay there, but anyway, it's kind of one of those, like, almost like, yeah, this award is like going to kind of be the award for that movie. Mm. Now there's cases where, you know, they've won multiple, you know, but, that's kind of how this one's been. And, especially, I mean, even though I don't think I saw this movie when it came out, I was certainly aware of the Damon and Affleck after this movie.
How long do you think it was before? How long had this been out before you saw it? Years?
No, it was probably college. I mean, probably when I got to college, like in 2000. Oh, okay. Yeah, early 2000.
Okay.
So I think I just consumed everything under the sun then. So
yeah.
Well, I didn't see R-rated movies when I was in high school.
Well, I think I had read at one point this one has as many F-bombs as any movie. It had some, you know, it's very high. Like, it's non-stop.
Yeah.
And not only that, you know, it's got some pretty raunchy jokes in it from these, these Southies from Boston. So earlier when I said I watched this on a Sunday afternoon, you know, following church, it was pretty eye-opening to me. I think it's maybe, if you're from Boston and offended by this, I don't know, maybe it's very representative of that. So
yeah,
I take it. Okay.
Yeah. Because even I was listening to a podcast with Bill Simmons and them. They actually did a live recording in Boston about this movie.
Okay.
And because some of the flack that the movie got apparently was like, oh, do people really talk like this? And Bostonians are like, they said that they really like nail the dialect and the intellect here. I do want to say I really liked the scene once again with Sean and Will, but when in particular they're talking about the baseball game, the Red Sox game, and mm-hmm. how he actually wasn't at the game. But did you like? I couldn't really. Throwing in the clips from the actual game. See, that was another thing. I think it works, but it's also kind of like we haven't seen this in the rest of the movie. Right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I think it definitely works for the scene, but there's moments like that where I'm like, this is kind of a crutch. I kind of wondered if the scene would have just been just as good without seeing those flashbacks. Cause I think that's the power of the scene is them
And
that's why I like sports so much is that how it's almost not so much the play that happens, but the moment of like where you were, like when you saw that and stuff. Yeah. But also like a scene I loved in it, but also that was kind of a scene too, where I was like, that was kind of a crutch to throw that in, but I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah. I hadn't really considered that. I was surprised by how long this movie felt to me. Yeah. It felt really long this time around.
It's a 2-hour and 6-minute movie, which is not the longest, but I mean, for a pretty talky movie, it's on the long side.
I think the greatest travesty is that apparently the bench that's featured in the movie when they're sitting on a bench together and maybe even on the cover of the poster. It doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, it doesn't?
How do you, Boston, or wherever they film this, how do you let that go by the wayside? I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a mistake.
Well, I feel real bad. I feel like I've just kind of been, like, destroying this movie. Like, I'm like, oh, you did like it, huh? Well, what about this scene?
You're so, entitled to that.
No. Well, just kind of... We'll definitely close things up, but I thought it'd be fun just to throw some little pop quiz questions at you, like what was going on around that time. Okay.
Okay.
See how up to date Cushing was with pop culture news. So, what global news event in 1997 drew an estimated 2.5 billion TV viewers and became one of the most watched broadcasts in history?
97. Is this like the funeral of Princess Di?
It was, yes. Yes.
You tipped your hand earlier when you mentioned Elton John's Candle in the Wind.
Candle in the Wind, yeah. Yeah. Very, very good. I feel like I should have some prizes for you. So, like a can of Crystal Pepsi.
We also have watched The Crown.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, we finished that up not that long ago.
Okay.
It's on my mind.
Did you like the actress who played her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she was good. I mean, I'm no Princess Di aficionado, so she could have been way off, and I wouldn't know it. But
yeah. Quick memory about that when that happened. I remember, you know, it's kind of hard with these memories, right? Like, this is what I meant. But I remember, I might be wrong. I need to fact check this, but I think it was a Saturday evening because the memory I have was that I was watching Saturday Night Live, and it cut the broadcast and cut to what happened to Princess Di. And I remember my mom coming in and scoffing because she thought it was Saturday Night Live, but I thought she basically made the joke like, this is a real distasteful joke or something like that. Yeah. And so that's kind of my memory from it. Wow. And honestly, at that time I was probably like Princess Di, like that just wasn't,
sure.
British royalty was not on my radar.
No,
as a high school,
very much so.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. I bet you get this one. Which video game console released in September of '97 in North America was the first to use memory cards and introduce titles like Crash Bandicoot and Final Fantasy VII?
Oh, is that the N64?
Nope,
wasn't that one. PlayStation?
It was Sony PlayStation.
The original PlayStation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Did you have a Sony PlayStation?
No. I only went as far as a Super Nintendo. My friend Matt Fondren, though, I remember he and his brothers like saving up for a PlayStation, and it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I played his.
I didn't ever own a PlayStation when it came out. Mm-hmm. I think I like bought one actually after college sometime because it was like cheap at that point, just to kind of like have it and see or whatever. But
yeah.
Or maybe it was a PlayStation 2, but I thought it was like nice of them that you could play old PlayStation 1 games on it.
Yes.
But I don't know why. Okay. So, this is an animated film question. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a hint. It's not Ferngully.
Okay.
Okay. So what animated film released in 1997 was the first non-Disney movie to be nominated for a Best Original Song Oscar and featured a heroine voiced by Meg Ryan?
Ooh.
This is a tough one.
I have no idea.
It's Anastasia.
Okay, I would have never landed on that. I don't even remember that movie coming out. I didn't know Meg Ryan did an animated movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
there you go.
There you go. Who made that movie? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll move on. I'll look it up later.
This podcast also called Boom Making Nathan Search IMDb. I remember the movie poster, probably that's it. I know I didn't see the actual movie, but
yeah,
mainly probably because in the video store, especially with the like a title beginning with A, like that was always like the first thing that you like saw. Okay. So I always thought that would be like a big key in like coming up with the movie title or something, was being in the front end of the alphabet back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I wonder if I'm thinking of it like a studio head now or whatever like that. So Good Will Hunting, you know, is kind of right there in the middle of the pack. So
okay,
you know, the person searching through the copies aren't quite burnt out yet, you know.
Yeah. But
yeah. So, okay. So going back to this movie, what's the most 90s thing about Good Will Hunting?
It's gritty.
Yeah.
It's people being real.
Yes.
It's good music. Original music. Some non-original music. And it's great 90s actors. Yeah. That's what's 90s about this to me. Also, I saw it in the 90s. Well, that's the most 90s thing. Because, this is made in 97. It's really to me, it's just on the cusp of the 2000s, which this, I think this might feel like more of an early 2000s movie to me, honestly, now that I think about it. But, yeah, it feels like a 90s movie to me because I was very much in the 90s watching this.
Yeah.
That's a terrible answer.
It is a terrible answer.
Yeah.
On the joking side, like two things that kind of jumped out to me, the 90s things. One was Elliott Smith, for sure, mm-hmm. like on the soundtrack. I was like, yep, this is.
Yeah.
But really, Miramax in general, but in particular, the list of producers that like open this movie in the credits, you know, obviously Harvey Weinstein, but also but also like Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier were producers on this film.
Okay.
So just, I would say the opening credits is like, it seemed like the most 90s thing because it was just like, oh, wow, this is just a slew of
I don't know Kevin Smith. What is he like? Is he the Scream guy?
No. Kevin Smith, he made, and we're actually in cover one of his films in the series, but he made Clerks and Dogma and Ballrats.
Is he also in those?
Yes.
Okay.
He's Silent Bob.
I did not realize he was a producer on this.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and who's the other guy?
Scott Mosier was his other producing partner.
Okay.
But famously, like, he's buddies with Damon and Affleck and okay. kind of help them through. Yeah. So,
well, you could have told me that ahead of time. That makes it very much a 90s movie.
Yeah. But why, like Kevin Smith was early on in the Miramax Weinstein kind of world or whatever like that. So,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so definitely, I mean, even though I do really enjoy this movie, I enjoyed watching it again. I do think it's a movie people should see. So if anything, it is fun to see this young talent, but mm-hmm. We didn't really talk about it much, and we don't have to dive into it too much, but I think Ben Affleck's really good in this movie. Mm-hmm. I love the scene where he's giving Will a hard time about wanting to stay where he's at and stuff, you know? I will say, sorry, I said I was closing this up. The beginning scenes kind of threw me off a little bit about him like coming to pick him up at the house. And mm-hmm. I understand what scenes are set. They're setting a scene, but some of them I was like, this is taking a lot of time to like just show two guys like going to work. But it did like pay off at the end of where he's talking about, you know, every time I come up here, you know, and I come up to that door, I don't want you to be there. You know, yeah. It really did pay off. So there were some things where I was kind of like, oh, okay, I see. But right when the movie like started, that's kind of I was like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Let's go here.
Yeah.
But, you have any thoughts about that?
No.
I bet I've seen
this movie 20 or 30 times.
Wow.
I've seen it a lot. I mean,
okay, so I won't give you too hard of a time about listening to it while you're mowing. So you're,
no, I've
you're
seen it
visually seeing it.
Seen it so many times because I love it so much, and it's if I haven't sat down to watch it, like it's a background movie for me, and so that's why I feel like I it's hard for me to like pull it apart like that, and because it all runs together. You know, like all of those scenes.
Yeah,
I love the setup of it. It transported me to a different place.
Yeah.
I don't know Boston. And I felt like from that movie, I was like, oh, that's what Boston's like.
Yeah.
That's what that kind of life is like. A rough life, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I understand. Well, man, thank you so much for inviting me to drive up to Houston to do this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for coming all the way to me.
I enjoyed this conversation. And I just want to encourage anybody, if you have one question I did want to ask you. You said you owned it on DVD. Did you ever own this on VHS?
No.
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 Yeah.
No. No. Did you?
No.
No. I mean, I think like I don't know when I first got a DVD player, but this would have been on the cusp of it.
Yeah.
So the, I mean, for me, DVDs, and I had lots of them, is I loved to listen to director's commentaries.
Yeah. I wondered if this one has it.
Yeah. I'm sure that it does.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I listened to it. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think it would be great to listen to if Damon and Affleck were on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that exists or not, but it would be interesting to hear.
On that note, as a final note, maybe from my end, is Ben Affleck has some of the funniest commentary you could ever listen to on the Armageddon.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
It's really good. I've listened to some of it recently. So anyway, go check that out.
How did you listen to it recently?
I probably stumbled across some like short of it on YouTube.
Okay, yeah.
Of a particular segment where he's talking about how in Armageddon, you know, oil men are saying how simple it is to like go to Mars. You know, they're basically becoming astronauts in 7 days.
Right.
And how they're demeaning the astronauts of how like, you know, this isn't rocket science. Just drilling.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. Well, it's so funny. Well, yes. So I want to encourage you, if you have your own memories about Good Will Hunting, thoughts about this movie, if you agree with Bo more, if you agree with me more, just would love to hear your feedback. We're on all the social media things, but you also can email us at moviesarelifepod@gmail.com. And so before we close this out too, I just want to say we were talking about Apollo 13 playing in the other room, and I'm pretty sure we started this recording and they stopped playing the movie. Don't you get that sense?
Well, yes.
They're like, okay, good, they're gone. We don't have to watch this anymore. we've had enough space stuff for one day. So, well, thanks everyone, and thanks for pressing play on the past.